welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 category smart. This is Jesse Colhagen, and you're listening to the Life Note, Sapiens, by Yuval Noah Harari, and summarized by Marcia Joseph. As always, we'll begin with a quote. 70,000 years ago, Homo sapiens was still an insignificant animal minding its own business in a corner of Africa. In the following millennia, it transformed itself into the master of an entire planet and the terror of the ecosystem. End quote. Sapiens, subtitled A Brief History of Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari, is a remarkable book. In a sweeping look at every era from when humans first walked the planet until now, Harari tackles topics like why we were able to catapult quickly forward in our development, how myths and stories brought us together, why the agricultural revolution is history's biggest fraud, how empire building and religion shaped our history, and the trend toward families and communities that are collapsing. Finally, he considers whether our progress in history has actually made us happier. He covers four major segments: the cognitive revolution, the agricultural revolution, the unification of humankind, and the scientific revolution, with fascinating insights in each of these. This isn't just a repeat of what you learned in history class. It offers a completely fresh and provocative view. Yuval Noah Harari lectures at the Department of History at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. He has a PhD in history from the University of Oxford, and clearly a very brilliant mind. There's a reason why Sapiens was on the recommended reading list of people like Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg. If you'd like to have your own intellectual category taken up a notch as well, we think Sapiens is the perfect place to start. The first big thought: Homo sapiens, not the only humans. Quote, "We're used to thinking about ourselves as the only humans, because for the last 10,000 years, our species has indeed been the only human species around. Yet the real meaning of the word human is an animal belonging to the genus Homo, and there used to be many other species of this genus besides Homo sapiens." End quote. To understand how far we've come in history, it's helpful to start at the beginning. About 6 million years ago, the author tells us that an ape had a daughter who became our own grandmother. And even though our history books often show the evolution of Homo sapiens, hereafter called sapiens, in a straight line from ape to modern man, Harari points out that this is incorrect. Quote, "The truth is that from about 2 million years ago until about 10,000 years ago, the world was home at one and the same time to several human species." End quote. In the same way that there are different species of animals, there were different human species running around the earth in various places all at the same time. One of those species is what we often call Neanderthals. In recent years, geneticists have been able to prove that, quote, 1-4% of the unique human DNA of modern populations in the Middle East and Europe is Neanderthal DNA, end quote. So we know what this means, that some of our own sapiens ancestors were getting pretty friendly with a completely different species of humans, the Neanderthals. Elsewhere, there were other human species too, such as on the island of Flores, where humans there uniquely evolved to be dwarf-sized. There's much more about this fascinating start to our history in Sapiens as a basis for understanding just how it is that we sapiens have been able to separate ourselves so distinctly from other species, including other human species, to evolve to where we are today. Let's take a deeper look at that next. How sapiens passed the limits of genes, myths, stories, and giant leaps. Quote, "One-on-one, even 10-on-10, we are embarrassingly similar to chimpanzees. Significant differences begin to appear only when we cross the threshold of 150 individuals. And when we reach 1,000 to 2,000 individuals, the differences are astounding. The real difference between us and chimpanzees is the mythical glue that binds together large numbers of individuals, families, and groups. This glue has made us the masters of creation." End quote. Harari describes a cognitive revolution in our history, which happened somewhere between 70,000 and 30,000 years ago. But there's uncertainty regarding what caused it. just how is it that sapiens were able to leap ahead of other animals and even other human species in such a dramatic fashion? There are a couple of important considerations he shares. Language. Other animals can communicate with each other. For example, monkeys use different calls to each other depending on if they're warning about an eagle or a lion. But sapiens' language ability is much more complex, giving us a huge evolutionary advantage. Gossip. One theory is that our ability to gossip was extraordinarily helpful in our evolution. Harari writes, quote, "Social cooperation is our key for survival and reproduction. It's not enough for individual men and women to know the whereabouts of lions and bison. It's much more important for them to know who in their band hates whom, who is sleeping with whom, who is honest, and who is a cheat." And finally, myths and stories. Here might be the real difference, that our myths and stories allow communication to be spread much more broadly than the limitations of our own small inner circles and communities. Through our collective stories and myths, we can cooperate in much bigger numbers than is otherwise possible for other animals. Harari writes, quote, "You could never convince a monkey to give you a banana by promising him limitless bananas after death in monkey heaven," end quote. But indeed, we willingly give some of our quote-unquote bananas to our churches or other religious institutions or to our financial institutions to invest them for us based on the stories we believe about life after death or expected return on investment. The Agricultural Revolution, History's Biggest Fraud. Quote, "The Agricultural Revolution is one of the most controversial events in history. Some partisans proclaim that it set humankind on the road to prosperity and progress. Others insist that it led to perdition. This was the turning point, they say, where sapiens cast off its intimate symbiosis with nature and sprinted towards greed and alienation." End quote. We hold a common view that when we went from hunting and foraging as our way of life to settling down on our domesticated farms, that we went from hell to heaven on earth. But is this really true? Harari calls the agricultural revolution history's biggest fraud. He provokes us by challenging us to consider what trade-offs we made by going from hunting and foraging to staying in one place and relying on single crops, such as growing wheat, for example. Here are a few trade-offs to consider. Number one, people worked much harder after the agricultural revolution. It's estimated that the hunter-gatherers likely worked less than 35 to 45 hours a week, where today in the developing world, the author tells us that people work 60 or more hours a week. Certainly there were dangers and challenges when we were roaming around hunting and foraging, but we had much more freedom, both geographical freedom and more free time as well. Number two, our diet got worse, with much less variety. Quote, "Remember, humans are omnivorous apes who thrive on a wide variety of foods," end quote. So before we plunked ourselves down on farms, we were moving over a varied terrain that in turn had a whole variety of food. On farms, on the other hand, we relied on just a few domesticated plants, such as wheat or potatoes, for example. Our variety of different nutrients then became much more limited. And number three, infectious diseases became a much bigger issue. This problem arose because many of those infectious diseases originated from the domesticated animals. Diseases such as smallpox and measles are examples. In addition to the human trade-offs that we made as a result of the agricultural revolution, there's the consideration of how we impacted animals on the planet as well, including domesticated animals such as cows and chickens, due to our food supply needs. The author explores this point in Sapiens, and let's just say that it's both enlightening and sobering. Disturbing might even be a better word. There's one particular photograph of chicks on a conveyor belt that tells this story in a particularly direct way. So while it might seem to be a strange question, whether we were better off before the agricultural revolution, it's actually quite an interesting reminder that we should at times ask whether progress brings us only forward or cause us to take some steps back as well. As it applies to your own life, you might then challenge some of the common assumptions about progress and instead adapt strategies that work for you. For example, just because technology has progressed to the point that your phone and your hand can connect you to the world at all times, Is it really leading you to your own progress by checking it constantly throughout the day? What are the common assumptions about progress that you might be blindly adhering to in your own life? Consider these as you write your premises for each section of your life book and have the courage to challenge society's premises to develop ones that are most empowering for your unique situation and goals. Religion, superhuman order and legitimacy. Quote, "Today, religion is often considered a source of discrimination, disagreement, and disunion. Yet, in fact, religion has been the third great unifier of humankind alongside money and empires. Since all social orders and hierarchies are imagined, they are all fragile, and the larger the society, the more fragile it is. The crucial role of religion has been to give superhuman legitimacy to these fragile structures." End quote. There's so much great food for thought about religion and its historical context in Sapiens. This is a particularly interesting part of the book. Harari tackles topics such as how Sapiens came to believe in gods, and then one god in the first place, evolving from animism, where animals, plants, and other objects were thought to be inhabited by spirits. He also explores the differences between polytheism, believing in many gods, and monotheism, believing in just one god, and what impact this had in history. One example is that polytheists were more tolerant of other religions and didn't feel that they had to convert people within a geography that they conquered. Monotheists, such as Christians, on the other hand, were very busy spreading Christianity across the globe very actively. Overarching these specific discussions is a theme that religion served as a unifying force for society, despite clashes between religions throughout history. Harari outlines two key points on this topic. Number one, religions hold that there is a superhuman order, which is not the product of human whims or agreements. And number two, based on this superhuman order, religion establishes norms and values that it considers binding. So religions have helped to unify large numbers of people, in part due to beliefs in a common moral code of what is right or wrong. Where a chimpanzee doesn't have to think twice about killing a potential threat, Sapiens certainly do. Whatever your own religious beliefs, it can be particularly helpful at times to step back and look at religion from a much broader point of view, including the history of religion and why it evolved the way it did. Many of us choose the religious beliefs that our parents chose, and in turn that their parents chose, and so on, all the way back into history. Have you ever stepped back to very deeply consider what you believe? Perhaps Sapiens will give you some additional perspective to factor into your own equation. Now let's take a brief look at empire building and how that helped to influence our evolution as well. Exploring and conquering, filling in the empty maps. Quote, "The European imperial expeditions transformed the history of the world. From being a series of histories of isolated peoples and cultures, it became the history of a single integrated human society. These European explore and conquer expeditions are so familiar that we tend to overlook just how extraordinary they were." End quote. The author tells us that although much of the world was still unexplored back in the 1400s and 1500s, mapmakers used to fill in the blank spaces in the maps with pictures of monsters or other such imagined details. But then something shifted, and the whole explore and conquer mindset began to take hold. Quote, "Europeans began to draw world maps with lots of empty spaces, one indication of the development of the scientific mindset, as well as of the European imperial drive." End quote. When we allowed these empty spaces to exist on world maps, it was an acknowledgement that there was much more to learn, much more yet to explore. Also noteworthy is the fact that the scientific revolution emerged hand in hand with imperialism. As explorers set out to conquer new lands to expand their empire from back home, they also encountered new scientific discoveries. Knowledge of everything from botany to geography to language all expanded greatly. In just a short time, the world changed dramatically, as the rush to fill in those blank spaces in the map gained even more urgency. The link, then, between capitalism, empire building, and scientific knowledge is closely intertwined. The details of this linkage are a particularly interesting part of Sapiens. Now let's go from macro to micro and take a quick look at the author's interesting insights about what happened to families and communities as all of these new developments were happening in the world. The collapse of family and community, and the rise of imagined communities. Quote, "In an old-fashioned medieval community, when my neighbor was in need, I helped build his hut and guard his sheep without expecting any payment in return. When I was in need, my neighbor returned the favor." End quote. As earlier noted, Harari challenges us at times to question long-held assumptions of good versus bad, or whether progress is in fact always beneficial. A great example of this is the collapse of the family structure and our close-knit communities, as our freedom and independent way of life has become more ingrained in our culture. Early in our history as humans, and throughout the majority of our history, the family unit and community were vital to our survival. Yet more recently, we simply don't require those close networks in order to survive. It's common for families to live hundreds or even thousands of miles apart, and the web of the community around us has also decreased dramatically in importance. In place of those real communities, there has been a rise in imagined communities, explains Harari. Our loyalty to our state or nation is an example. There is also now the existence of our consumer tribe. If you're a Mac computer user, for example, you might consider yourself part of that tribe. Or on Black Friday, just after Thanksgiving, you might even be one of those who wakes up at dawn to gather with the rest of your consumer tribe to get the best deals on a new television. Harari explains that, quote, "Consumerism and nationalism work extra hours to make us imagine that millions of strangers belong to the same community as ourselves, that we all have a common past, common interests, and a common future. This isn't a lie. It's imagination." End quote. Earlier, we talked about how myths and stories help hold us together and unify us in much larger numbers than our small tribes and villages from the past. So our advice is to notice these imagined communities, such as the consumer tribe, and ask yourself if this is really the community and tribe that you choose to be in. Are we happier, or is it just a delusion? Quote, "The economy has grown exponentially, and humankind today enjoys the kind of wealth that used to be the stuff of fairy tales. Science and the Industrial Revolution have given humankind superhuman powers and practically limitless energy. The social order has been completely transformed, as have politics, daily life, and human psychology. But are we happier?" End quote. After a thorough look at all of human history, the triumphs and struggles, the advances, and the destruction caused in its wake, Harari asks that very important question. But are we happier? Our material wealth is certainly higher, for example, but at what price? Harari writes, quote, "Most current ideologies are based on rather flimsy ideas concerning the real source of human happiness," end quote. In previous Life Notes, we've explored the topic of happiness as well. In The How of Happiness, we learned about certain myths about happiness, such as the one that says, the richer you are, the happier you are. And in Flourish, we learned to look at happiness in an even more robust way, to consider other important factors, such as meaning and achievement, in addition to pure happiness or pleasure. In Sapiens, the author takes a look at history to help provide perspective as to whether we really are better off now. Yes, we are living longer and we have more wealth, but he notes that, quote, "Perhaps people in modern affluent societies suffer greatly from alienation and meaninglessness despite their prosperity," end quote. So we have that and many other factors to consider. It's possible that we're happier now, but it's also possible that this is a delusion. We can't go back and change history, but we certainly can step back from time to time and try to lift ourselves up to a broader perspective to understand history better and to learn from it. As Theodore Roosevelt said, the more you know about the past, the better prepared you are for the future. The good news is that after reading Sapiens, you'll certainly know much more about the past. Although the book spans all of human history, there's obviously much more to uncover. This is an amazing, multi-layered, complex, and unique book that absolutely deserves a place in your own personal library. We hope you found this Life Note valuable and insightful. Thank you so much for listening in. We look forward to sharing more wisdom with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.